Okay, good morning. Oh, come on, good morning. Hey, there we go. A lot of party goers, I think. Have we anyone from Portugal in? I'm sorry. England, we're even worse. We never even got that far, so. Anyway, this session really follows on from part one yesterday, but if you didn't see part one yesterday, don't worry, it's available online. So you can download it and watch it later. But we will recap a little bit of what we covered yesterday later on. But we're going to focus this session on really comparing that next level above virtualization. Systems management, efficient automation, and ultimately, private cloud. My name's Matt McSpirit. I'm a senior product marketing manager at Microsoft in the US, originally from the UK. And my role at Microsoft really involves analyzing our competitors, in particular, one particular competitor, VMware, and helping our field, our staff, our customers and partners understand just what choices they have out there for them around Hyper-V and around systems management and private cloud. And as I said, this is part two of a series, of which you can get part one on demand. If it's not available yet, it'll be available very shortly. And this session really focuses on comparing Hyper-V and Windows Server and System Center-based private clouds and some of the capabilities we provide in our portfolio with what VMware are doing with their vCloud work and their new technologies they're bringing to market. So we'll look at some of the choices, and then we'll look at some of the comparisons within each of those. But in terms of cloud and what it's all about for people, ultimately there's four attributes that make cloud different from regular virtualization. There's the pooling of these resources, the aggregation of all of the CPU, the memory, the network, and a presentation through to the application owner or the business unit owner to consume those resources. If you think about Windows Azure as a good example. Windows Azure is a public cloud service where you don't get bogged down in the weeds of the hardware and the storage and the networking and stuff. You just consume applications as a platform for your apps, or more recently, virtual machines that are running on this fabric. But you don't get involved in the nuts and bolts and the rebooting and all of that kind of stuff. So the resources have been pooled for you, and what you see is the end result. And you're accessing things like Azure or Office 365 or Intune through a self-service portal. You're not getting down in the weeds with the configuration and rebooting and patching. You're just accessing the end result. Based on who you are, you have access to certain things. So self-service is a key driver. But within enterprise IT environments, we're starting to see more of a demand from internal business units to request resources, compute, or virtual machines. And that's becoming more and more common. And we often see in a lot of organizations, I'll just email the guy I know in IT and he'll give me a server, send. There's no change management around that. There's a little bit of control, but not enough to really demand what the next generation of private cloud infrastructures can really provide. But when it comes to these applications, when you're running at scale, you want to ensure that if something changes, you can meet the demand quickly. Think about an organization that handles mail, not email, but physical mail, post. If you think about their busiest times, it's going to be times like Christmas, where they've got to process more stuff. And at Christmas time, are they going to want to have all of the servers to meet the demand of Christmas time on all year round? No, because that's a waste. So being able to scale on demand, both up and down, is very flexible and can save them money. And therefore, that elasticity is a key component of cloud computing in general. And finally, nothing comes for free. Well, Hyper-V server is free, as we touched on yesterday, but nothing else comes for free in terms of technology. And what I mean by that is, it's got to run somewhere. So Hyper-V server, whilst the download is free, you've still had to pay for the servers and the storage and the networking. So there's still some kind of charge there that you really want to recoup. And if you're delivering private or public cloud services into your IT environment, you're going to want to be able to track the resources and charge accordingly. So for example, if you're delivering out six servers to the HR department to run their key application, you might want to charge them per server or per CPU or whatever it may be. So having that controlled consumption is important. But all of those characteristics are of cloud in general. But what changes with private cloud is it's typically controlled by you. So you're controlling the tools, the systems management tools that enable you to deliver those kind of attributes. It may exist on your premises, it may exist on a service provider's premises, but you've got the control and you can customize it. Go back to the Azure example. I can't tailor and tweak the underlying Azure fabric, but if I'm delivering a private cloud, I can configure the Hyper-V, vSphere, Zen Server host to do what I need them to do more effectively for my business. So it's a choice you make. When we look at that from a product perspective and all of the kind of key characteristics of hypervisor, virtual machine management, monitoring, self-service, when we look at a VMware side of things, we see that that hypervisor layer, that virtualization layer that we covered yesterday, vSphere, whether it's the free edition, more likely to be the full vSphere SKU, because you're going to need vSphere to really deliver some of these more advanced capabilities as we go along. If you just have the free vSphere hypervisor, you're going to be lacking in certain areas. But when it comes to virtual machine management, vCenter, it's a separate purchase, but it goes hand in hand with vSphere. They're synonymous with each other, and vCenter really is the linchpin for all of these other layers on top. But there's another tool or product on there called vFabric Application Director. And you think, well, what's that for? I might not have heard of vFabric Application Director. What's that all about? Well, if you're used to using vCenter and vSphere, as we saw a number of people were yesterday in the session, which was great. It was great. But vCenter, when you're deploying virtual machines from templates, typically you're deploying an individual VM from a template, one at a time. We've seen more recently this evolution of these things called vApps, which help to combine multiple VMs that you can then deploy. But the granularity around vApps is a little bit lacking in terms of the configuration options you've got. Really, it's just a collection of a couple of virtual machines that share some kind of commonality. And if you want to deploy them, you can set the order of the VMs that they come online or reboot or whatever and manage the IP addresses. But this application director is a different direction. It's allowing organizations to specify what are known as blueprints. So I would like a multi-tiered app. Think of something like SharePoint as an example. SharePoint is made up of a database backend, a web frontend, and an application server. It's a multi-tiered application. And the blueprints that are within vFabric Application Director would allow an organization to deploy those kind of multi-tiered apps with that little bit more granularity than what you would get in vCenter. But it is just it's a standalone separate product. When it comes to monitoring, VMware have been really busy in the last 12 months. So an acquisition or a couple of acquisitions they made in this space, enabling them to provide what's now known as the vCenter Operations Management Suite. And within that suite, there's four editions: Standard, Advanced, Enterprise, and Enterprise Plus, each with increasing capabilities. But on the surface, at a high level, it's providing that monitoring capability and some rich dashboards of a view of what vCenter is collecting in terms of information and metrics about your CPUs, memory, ESXi hosts. But unless you start to go to the higher end editions of this vCenter Ops Management Suite, you're still lacking that ability to look inside the virtual machine. So you're getting a black box view of the CPUs and the memory usage of the VM, but if you want to start to see inside at what's going on at the guest OS level, or also in physical servers that aren't to do with vSphere at all, then you're looking to go to the higher end SKUs with a slightly increased cost. When it comes to monitoring applications, web applications, database-based applications, again, there's that vFabric, that new brand that's enabling VMware with vFabric Application Performance Manager to start to monitor applications. And Hyperic is an engine that drives these metrics into Application Performance Manager. So they've been busy. When it comes to automation, if you've got vCenter today, you'll have vCenter Orchestrator. And we'll look and compare and contrast that a bit later on. When it comes to protection, data recovery is the inbox, ships with vSphere, backup technology that sits within vSphere. But just out of interest, and we'll get another show of hands in case it's different people, how many people are running vSphere today? Great. How many people are using the, of those people, how many people are running the in-box VMware backup tools. So that's very interesting. Okay, so how many people are running Veeam? Okay, a few. Symantec? A few more. Storage vendor backup tools? Okay, interesting. So there's a different spread there, but it's clear that data recovery obviously hasn't appealed, and I think it's lacking in a few areas around workload and application protection, and we'll look at that a bit later on. And then we get to some of the newer stuff. So Service Manager. This was an acquisition VMware made not that long ago with a combined acquisition with some of their other tools they acquired. But we've not really seen much of it. There's very little documentation out there around what it does, how it works, how it integrates. And when we're talking private cloud, integration's a key point. And finally, something that is a little bit more mature, vCloud Director. And that's enabling you to go from just vSphere into a vCloud. And it's providing that self-service, that key attribute we talked about, where application owners can consume resources that they want to, their VMs, their networks, and whatever it may be. So that's the VMware stack. But on the Microsoft side, we talked about Hyper-V yesterday. We're going to look at Virtual Machine Manager and how that's managing our virtual machines environment, as the name would suggest. But notice it's one product to kind of do what vCenter and App Director are doing. So Virtual Machine Manager is giving us that ability to deploy those multi-tiered applications in the box without a separate product. And we'll look at that a bit more detail later on. Monitoring with Ops Manager, automation with Orchestrator, Data Protection Manager from System Center, which can actually protect VMware environments. It can't back up the ESX or ESXi host, but you can put it inside the VMs if you want some workload protection. We see some customers doing that if they're licensed for System Center already. And then we see Service Manager, and finally, a new addition to the System Center portfolio, App Controller. And throughout the demonstrations we'll see shortly, you'll see each of these products, or at least a few of them, intertwine and integrate to deliver that very efficient private cloud. But that's a product view. But how does that look from a licensing perspective? Well, with Microsoft and VMware, it's very different. Because with VMware, with the exception of Data Recovery and Orchestrator, all of those are separate products you've got to consider. vSphere per CPU, the rest of them are all per virtual machine license for the most part. But with Microsoft, Hyper-V we saw being free, and System Center 2012 gets you the rest. So it's a simplified licensing model that helps organizations move towards that private cloud if they want to. So the focus of the session in terms of comparison, we've seen the kind of products that are powering it, or at least we've talked about them. I'm going to focus on applications, because that's what's really differentiating just deploying regular VMs to deploying into this private cloud. We're going to look at how heterogeneous management is becoming more and more important. Believe it or not, not everyone is running 100% Microsoft. You know, a lot of people have a mixed infrastructure. Yesterday, we saw a lot of people, and today, we saw a lot of people with vSphere, we saw people with Linux. I'm sure there are different app platforms and management tools that you've made. And we don't want to come along and say, System Center's great, now everything you've done in the past, let's just put it over there, and let's start again. It's not the case. It's not going to work that way. So we need to understand how we can provide a better heterogeneous integration. Foundation for the future, really enabling you to scale these workloads, and that's kind of our recap of yesterday. And then finally, how you can embrace the cloud in different ways. So if we start on these apps, when it comes to the application, we're going to focus on how we deploy, how we manage and maintain, and how we protect. And in the first section, construct and deliver, I'm going to jump straight into a demo. So I want to show you how, context-wise, we're changing the way we deliver applications. So let me go to demo one. There we go. So remote desktop across to the US, so it may be a little bit sluggish here and there, but bear with me. On the screen, we've got an application that we've deployed into a private cloud. It's not been released yet in terms of internally, this application is still in pre-production, but it's an important application. It's an expenses application. What could be more mission critical than getting my money back after a trip or whatever it may be? And this application, we've been user acceptance testing it, so people have been feeding in data and just trying to test the system so it works effectively. And we can see that in this case, if we drill into this MMS report from a couple of months ago, you'll see that somebody's been spending a lot of money on coffee, a fair amount on flights with a fictitious airline, and that Margie's travel, they've been staying in a certain hotel and so on. A very metroized application, which is great. But as the application owner, so I'm going to put that hat on now, I'm the app owner. In my business, I own Expense Manager. It's my project, it's my baby. I'm going to see what that looks like from an infrastructure perspective. So if I go to App Controller, which is that self-service portal within the Microsoft stack of products that we saw earlier on, you'll see that when I'm signed in this case as a guy called Ryan. So identity is a key pillar within the Microsoft play. Having that common identity where I can log into these different systems and it knows who I am, and because it knows who I am, it also knows what I've got access to. In this case, this private cloud. Think what we said before about the pooling of resources. That's what I'm being presented with here, a pool of resources from Virtual Machine Manager that's presenting from this fabric that I don't need to know about anymore, because I'm that application owner. That's the hat I've got on now. So under the covers, there could be Hyper-V machines, there could be vSphere, Zen Server, all of that stuff, loads of networking and storage complexity. But what I've presented through to me is just this resource pool, if you will, that's giving me a number of virtual machines that I can create, but it's given me a limit of the number of virtual processors I can run, storage and memory that I can consume. So I'm giving to the application owner, but I'm putting this fence around it to ensure that they can't consume too much. They don't want to abuse the system. And I could start to bill based on that and charge back if necessary. But as I said, in this cloud, we've got some services running, one of which is Expense Manager. But before I drill into that, you'll notice that this view looks a little bit different. There's a little virtual machine manager icon here to indicate that this app or service is running in the private cloud, managed by a virtual machine manager. But the other one has got a slightly different blue logo, and that's to indicate that this application, this service, has also been deployed to Azure in the public cloud. So as an application owner with that hat on again, I just want to see where my app is deployed. We've deployed it to two places there. So I'm consuming from public cloud and private into that same view. I'm not interested in the fabric and stuff underneath in either of those platforms. I just want to be able to consume my application. And if we expand this out, we'll see that this application is made up of multiple tiers. There's a database tier, an app tier, and a web tier. And they're connected to a common Contoso network. And that's enabling me to show this is a multi-tiered app that's been built from a multi-tiered template. So in the future, if I need multiple iterations of Expense Manager, because it's built in as a service template rather than just a one VM template, I can quickly deploy. And there's a great example, a great case study where we worked with ING Direct in Australia, where they needed to very quickly replicate their bank environment. So they built Bank in a Box, where they can quickly deploy all of the virtual machines in this kind of format very quickly. I need an instance of the bank, go. And Virtual Machine Manager would deploy all of the different tiers. They're already integrated on that Contoso network, might be on a separate VLAN or whatever it may be, and they're all integrated. And each of these tiers, these machine, front tier, web tier, SQL tier, it's not just Windows operating systems that's in there, generic. They've got granularity within each template, each individual VM template, to be able to specify roles that I need enabling within the Windows Server operating system, features that I need enabling, so I don't have to do that after I've deployed. And as the next level, we can specify an application tier within each of those VMs. So the SQL is already configured. The web platform, the web using MS deploy packages is already configured. So literally you are deploying an instance of this app and it's good to go as soon as it's landed. Compare that with traditional virtual machine deployment where you'll deploy the VM, you'll log in, you may then join it to the domain, you'll reboot, then you'll add the roles, you'll reboot, then you'll add any necessary applications, you might reboot again, and by the time you've wasted hours. So this way of delivering applications, even if it was just a one or a two-tier application, it's much more streamlined and quick, so enabling you to save time. But we can see if I go over to my expense control dashboard, because we've been We've been user acceptance testing it, but now we have to hammer the system. We need to make sure it can scale. Remember that elasticity we talked about before as one of those key attributes? So I'm going to ramp up the RAM and the CPU. And what's going to happen in the background is these tools are going to kick in and start to stress this application. But we've established, because we've got a good relationship with IT, we've established between IT and myself an SLA to say, you know what, I need a minimum level of performance for this application. And also, if things start to go downhill performance-wise, we need to respond. So I'd like this to happen. So IT in the background now has delivered me some effective monitoring capabilities. And if I go to Ops Manager, we can see they've given me a simple dashboard that monitors the CPU, the memory, and we can see that things are starting to happen. What you can't see in the background now is because we've exceeded a certain threshold, Orchestrator is now firing into action. It's taking an alert that might have fired relating to CPU usage is too high. It's taken that alert, it's figured out the private cloud that's affected, it's figured out the application that's affected, and it's starting to communicate with Virtual Machine Manager to say, you know what, we need to expand the frontier of this workload. And you'll see here, if I click and I expand it out, it's already adding an extra tier to that front end. So you'll find that now, instead of it being a three-tiered app, it's still a three-tier, but one of those tiers has got two virtual machines powering it, spreading the load. And at the time of less need, when those CPU metrics drop, we could remove one of those VMs. But because those templates are pre-configured and they've got all of the info they need, it's just adding an extra VM. So the time it takes for us to scale is literally the time it takes for the VM to be deployed. It's already all configured and good to go. So it's enabling us to do some pretty compelling stuff. And if we go back to the app controller portal, and we can see, we'll have a quick refresh, we'll see something's happening, deploying, and if we go to our clouds, we'll see that we're now at a stage where there are four virtual machines and we're consuming some more processing and CPU. So that's how it would automatically scale. We've got the runbooks in the background, and we'll see a little bit more about orchestration later on. Fast forward. Let's assume it's gone gold. This application, Expense Manager, has hit RTM, so we're ready to deploy into production. So we're going to need a new private cloud. So I could just go straight to IT and ring, hi John, yeah, can I have some more servers please, yeah, thanks, bye. Or I could do it through a bit more of a change managed approach and use the Service Manager self-service portal, where I can not consume resources, but request resources. So I can go to IT, who provided me a menu, like a service catalog, of stuff I can choose from. I mean, when you go to a restaurant, you don't typically go in and say, nice menu, but I'd like eggs and salmon, and you don't choose something completely different from what's on the menu. You choose what you can choose from. And giving IT the ability to deliver this menu to end users means that you can standardize a lot more effectively. So we can say, okay, let's go to the request form, let's choose a cloud, let's choose a size of cloud, so we've got small, medium, large. What do we want our return to operation to be? So we can specify we've got some links in with backup. But this is what the IT have presented to us. I'm going to choose 8 hours. And notice this bottom one is grayed out, AV protection and app monitoring. They're including that by default. So it's going to be monitored by Ops Manager. It's going to be backed up in accordance with AV and all that kind of stuff. So we'll go next. We'll go submit, there's my ticket gone, and that will raise a ticket within Service Manager that might then trigger some automation that delivers that private cloud. And conveniently, if we go back to App Controller, in fact, up here, and I refresh, there's our new cloud. Because all a cloud is a pool of resource. So Orchestrator has taken the relevant information from that form, delivered it to VMM, Virtual Machine Manager has built that private cloud, and presented it up through App Controller. Seamless and efficient. But there's no apps in there, there's no services. So we'll go to deploy. We'll select a service template, a multi-tiered template. Expense Manager, there it is. This is what we'll have left over in our pool once we've deployed this app, and we'll go OK. We can configure some of these within their individual layers if we want, or we can just go deploy. And very quickly, if we refresh, we'll start to see that that will then deploy that service. So three VMs will now be deployed by Virtual Machine Manager, and within a couple of minutes, or within, well, a few minutes, we'll see that you've now got a new service within that private cloud. So that's a very quick look at how we're changing the way, just minimize that, go back, you deliver applications. And it really can speed up the way you do things. Even if you're not, even if you see, if you think you're quite a static organization today, you think, well, I've got my 40 servers virtualized and I'm not adding any new servers frequently. But putting this in place for the future when demands change can really speed up the way you can respond to the rest of the business. So what do we really look at there? We looked at how we can standardize with VM templates. That granularity with the roles and features we can specify. So I need this particular template to be a web server. So I'm going to tick the IIS box and all of the role services that IIS needs for my particular app and save that as a template. We looked at service templates and we showed how we could deploy into clouds. We looked at, I logged in as into App Controller as Ryan, and it knew who I was and what I could consume, and also within Service Manager. What I didn't talk about there with Service Manager and that controlled consumption, that Service Manager portal is really around requesting. And you think, well, how do I get started? I'm new to Service Manager. How can I start to build this menu that you talked about? Microsoft make available a free download called the Cloud Services Process Pack. Catchy. CSPP, I guess. Cloud Services Process Pack that you can download, bolt it into Service Manager. It's free, and it will give you that leg up to get started with those common service requests around cloud provisioning. And it will help you integrate with the other System Center tools. But if we start to compare with what VMware are up to, VMware do deliver that role-based self-service. You go in through vCloud Director and you can see what's relevant to you, whether it's a virtual data center or a certain set of vApps or whatever it may be. But VMware did have a product that could enable them to request cloud resources. So vCloud Director you can use to consume them, but they did have a product called vCloud Request Manager to request. But it's gone. Deprecated, end of life, because customers now are being encouraged to move to this Service Manager, VMware Service Manager, of which there's not a huge amount of documentation. If you go to the VMware website, you'll see just an individual data sheet. So I'd certainly be asking the question of, well, how well does it integrate with these other components, if I was thinking of going down that route. VMware does do a good job of delivering standardized templates, but it doesn't today. Even within this vFabric application director, allow me to start to go that bit more granular around the roles and services around Windows VMs. With that application director, I can deploy apps within VMs, so I can specify this is my MySQL tier, where it's got an OS, maybe it's running Linux with MySQL, and they deliver that as a unit of part of a multi-tiered app. But it's not as granular and integrated as what we showed with Virtual Machine Manager and App Controller. And the final area is, what I didn't show there, or what I did show but indirectly, I deployed that service template, Expense Manager, into a private cloud. But that private cloud could have had VMware hypervisors at the back end, it could have had Hyper-V, it could have had Zen Server, it could have had a mix of all three. I could have had an individual tier of that three-tiered app, one tier on Hyper-V, one on vSphere, one on Zen, if I wanted to do that. Because VMM brings in the heterogeneous management, and we'll see that a bit more detail later on. And that's exposed then through App Controller. But with VMware and vCloud, it's all about vSphere. So if you don't have, if you've just got vSphere, that's fine. But if you've embraced any other hypervisors within your environment, you're not going to be able to use vCloud Director as that mechanism to deploy stuff onto those alternative hypervisors. So you're really locked on VMware there. But if you've just got VMware, then you know that's fine. So that's a little bit about constructing and deploying. I want to change direction now and talk about the apps that's been deployed and we want to maintain, ensure it's up and running effectively. And this is a little brief demo. So let's say that Expense Manager has been running great, everyone's happy, the application owner has been promoted, pay rise, all that kind of stuff, everything's going great. It's obviously not a real-world example. But in this example here, we'll see that Expense Manager is being monitored by Operations Manager, one of those other components within System Center. An Ops Manager, we're not giving people access here to the full Ops Manager console, because that's all-powerful, it's got all of the capabilities. We're giving the application owner just visibility through this web console. So we're giving them that role-based delegation just to see what's important to them. And you see that Expense Manager is available. We can ping it, we're communicating with it, we're using Ops Manager's watcher nodes and synthetic transactions to ensure that it is available and up, which is great. Now, VMware's management tools could do that equally, because they can tell you that a VM is running or it's off. Simple stuff. But what that's not going to tell us is this transaction level, stuff's starting to go wrong. And we can see there's latency, there's issues. We've got a little target in the bottom left there of 7, and we're at 16 in terms of response times. So we're not doing so good. And if we look at the application, it's running, it's up. But if I do click on, for example, let's refresh the page and see how quickly it's responding, things just are not going so well. So we can see that response time of the app, no good. But it's on, so it's available, which is a green tick of health. But there's something not quite right. Now, if we go into the application diagnostics console, which is another web console that Ops Manager can provide, it's a different view because we're consuming that different kind of information here. We're looking now inside, effectively inside the app. And Microsoft made an acquisition a little while ago of AviCode. And AviCode was a capability, it was a management pack for Ops Manager that allowed Ops Manager to monitor deep inside applications. We acquired that organization and that IP, and it's now built into 2012 Ops Manager. So it's not a separate plugin, it's built in. And it enables us to do some new things. And we can see that of that three-tiered app, we can see that the latency is terrible, so we'll click on it and look at some of these key metrics. And instantly your eyes are drawn to the fact there's a problem, and mousing over it, you can see there's some kind of SQL stuff in there. If I click, and there's a lot of failures, 179, and if I click and I start to expand this out, I'll show some parameters so we can see exactly what's going on. We'll expand this out. I'm going to scroll down, and we're looking deep inside the application. We're down to the actual query that's being performed for this application. This is where the latency is coming. You know, how many people here have been in the situation where you've virtualized an app that IT have built or the dev team have built, and stuff starts to go wrong, and the dev team are kind of saying, well, it's on your infrastructure, you virtualized it, and you're there going, well, it's the application, the virtual machines are all fine, and there's a lot of this, and fights, and all that kind of stuff breaks out, and a big war, and whatever. But now we're giving you that visibility into that application to say, look, I don't want to start a fight with you, but this is the problem here. We've narrowed it down. And you say, well, copy and paste, send it across an email. You say, well, I can do better than that, because I can go to Visual Studio with the Team Foundation Server integration we've built into Ops Manager. We can feed that in, that very alert, that very same information, through as a work item into Visual Studio. So we're helping to connect that whole DevOps scenario. So you can feed that in, they can triage that bug, go through it all. They've got the link on in the bottom left there to go to that exact diagnostics page where they can get all of the information and see it in a language that will resonate with them. So they can really help accelerate that remediation process of that application that we've deployed in the virtual environment. So that's how we can help link in that dev and that ops scenario and ultimately reduce the time that we can resolve problems. So maintenance of applications becomes centralized. Patching, monitoring, maintenance of apps that are within virtual machines, physical machines, it just doesn't matter. Ops Manager is giving us that visibility. And it extends beyond the private cloud, beyond the vSphere or the Hyper-V or the Zen server infrastructure. I'm enabling that monitoring of physical stuff. So if you've got a server that you haven't virtualized for whatever reason, don't exclude it from your private cloud, include it. So we can monitor, we can manage and maintain that more effectively. Even out to the desktop, tools within System Center 2012, like Configuration Manager, great tool for deploying Windows and managing and maintaining the configuration of Windows. And going forward, Linux and Mac. Integrated Service Management, we saw that in the previous demonstration. It's all talking to one another. the service portal within Service Manager is communicating through all of these different components. The CMDB, that's ultimately the brain and the power of Service Manager, everything plugs into it. One area of feedback we got around, positive feedback around Service Manager, was that, you know what, it's so easy to populate the CMDB. Because you establish these connectors, which we provide in the box, to these other system center tools, and it pulls in all of the alerts from Ops Manager, all of the desktop config from Configuration Manager, pulls in all of these sources from AD and everything, and starts building a web of relationships between all of these items. So I can see that, okay, a user has a problem, I can see the alert in Operations Manager. It's come through as an incident in Service Manager. I'll drill in. I can see the PC that was affected. I know all of the software that's on there because it's pulled all that information in. I can see who the primary user is. I can see all of the asset information. And I can start resolving that problem more quickly. I haven't talked about automation yet, but it's something I will show later on. When it comes to automation, that's really driving the cost down of the private cloud. And when I say relevant, it's great that we can automate stuff within System Center. But if you've not just got System Center tools within your environment, automation isn't really going to help you because you can't automate integration between all of these different systems. And that's something that with Orchestrator, we're really helping to drive because we've got integration packs for the likes of HP, BMC, CA, IBM, vSphere, ServiceNow, and we'll see some of them later on. But it's enabling you to automate across these different platforms as opposed to just automating Microsoft stuff. We showed the Deep Application Insight and we showed how that connects to DevOps. But what about when you start to look at VMware? Well, around patching and stuff with VMware, you've got that update manager to start to patch things. But if you want to go beyond just your vSphere infrastructure, because VMware vCenter Update Manager won't patch inside my guests anymore. With vCenter Update Manager in version 5, it just patches the vSphere host and the VM tools within the guests. So you're still going to need some kind of process to keep your VM guests up to date. So do you use WSUS as a completely separate scenario? Do you use Config Manager? Some people do. Or do you use one of the higher-end vCenter Operations Management Suite tools, like vCenter Configuration Manager? And if you're going to do that, that would allow you not only to patch your guests and your physical ESX host, but also stuff that's not virtualized on VMware as well. So it's an interesting move from VMware in that perspective. So that would give you non-virtualized infrastructure management on the VMware side. We talked about the service management before. We're a little bit unsure of what's happening there. But when you look at vCenter Orchestrator from an automation perspective, today it seems quite focused on VMware. So you can automate Update Manager and vSphere common commands and those kind of things. And there's a PowerShell API and some other APIs that you can plug in with. But with the exception of Cisco, because there is some Cisco stuff for their vCenter Orchestrator, there's nothing to integrate with HP or BMC or IBM or any of the, or System Center. So you're really just about automating that pocket of your infrastructure, which isn't really going to help you drive down costs as significantly as it could. When it comes to that App Insight, there's multiple tools with VMware. vCenter Operations Management Suite is going to monitor certain bits. The Application Performance Manager is going to monitor other bits. So you're looking at multiple tools to deliver that kind of same experience as Ops Manager. But where Ops Manager starts to differentiate itself is its extensibility. I've seen Operations Manager management packs, which is how it gets its knowledge about stuff. I've seen a management pack for a coffee pot. No kidding, you can, and one time I told this story, the guy who made it was in the audience. He was like, that's mine. But yeah, you can monitor a coffee pot. They'd set up a webcam, monitored the black pixels of this transparent coffee pot, and when it got below a certain level, an alert fired, and somebody then got an email to say, go and refill the coffee pot. But now, think about, and that was years ago, think about, they could raise a ticket, that could be approved, there could be a workflow, so you could build a private cloud based on a reduced amount of coffee. There's all sorts of scenarios that could go, but the key there isn't the coffee pot, it's a silly example, but it's the extensibility. And this management pack framework is allowing organizations to more deeply monitor Exchange, SQL, SharePoint, Oracle, all of these different key workloads that are important to the business, whether they're virtualized or not. And that's, I think, where today, at least, some of the VMware tools don't give that level of insight into those applications. But it's not just about the monitoring of the app. Oh, I've seen that Exchange has got a problem. Best of luck. Walk away. It's about identifying it's got a problem and giving you the information about how you can remediate it more quickly. So knowledge about this probably caused this problem and this is how you would recover from that. So it's quite useful from that point of view. And with VMware, they did have finally, when it comes to DevOps, a product a little while ago called Lab Manager, which gave devs the ability to kind of integrate with vSphere and build VMs for environments and all that kind of stuff. But that's been deprecated now, and the devs are being encouraged now to use vCloud Director. But it's a bit of a square peg and a round hole, because vCloud Director is really that self-service interface for you, yes, to deploy infrastructure, but it's not connected with any of the IDE development tools that devs may be using, whether it's Spring-based tools that VMware have got a good relationship with, whether it's Visual Studio, whatever it may be. It's a completely disconnected scenario, which is very different from what we saw with Ops Manager integrating with TFS. But if you've not got that in your environment, that need for that relationship, then it's not going to be important. And finally, I'm not going to do a demo for this one, but it's nice and quick. When we talk about protecting those apps, you saw when we were going through that private cloud, that request, return to operation or recovery to operation, 8 hours, 4 hours, all that kind of stuff. That would be triggering Data Protection Manager integration. And the beauty of DPM is it gives us the protection of core Microsoft workloads like Exchange, SQL, SharePoint, Hyper-V, and so on. Whether those workloads are physical or virtualized, obviously Hyper-V would be physical, but it's now been extended to protect other things that have got VSS writers. So we can now integrate and protect other stuff that isn't just Microsoft product. When it integrates with Operations Manager, so you integrate DPM with Ops Manager, we now allow that role-based granular configuration and management, similar to what we've seen with some of the other tools. And just out of interest, how many people still back up to tape? Wow, quite a few. For archiving and that kind of stuff, a few people. And that's interesting because DPM supports that, but what we're seeing is a move, not rapidly, but a lot of organizations are just going to disk. Maybe disk to short-term and disk to long-term, but tape is still a viable option for a lot of organizations. And what a lot of people don't realize is that DPM actually has a DR solution built in, something called DPM to DPM for DR, where I'll have a DPM or multiple DPM servers on site A protecting stuff, and then on site B, I'll have another DPM server that's protecting site A's DPM server. So you're doing DPM to DPM for DR. And in the event of a disaster, we've lost that site, we can restore from the secondary DPM server. So very low cost, there's no per VM licensing and all that kind of stuff. But you think, well, would I use that, or would I use Hyper-V Replica? You know, this gives me a little bit more granularity at the application layer, so Exchange, SQL, SharePoint, whereas Replica gives me stuff at the Hyper-V layer. So we'll see a more streamlined combining of these solutions, I'm sure, in the future and positioning. But today it's about choice. But don't forget that DR, if you were to bring up stuff on the second site, it would be a manual restoration from a backup. So it might take time. Click that VM, restore. Click that Exchange server, restore. Unless I'm automating with something like Orchestrator. With VMware, and you kind of highlighted it for yourself earlier on with the show of hands, it's a good little backup technology that's built into vSphere, but it is pitched at that SMB customer. It's kept at that kind of 100 VM per data recovery appliance scale, but it's not giving, I think the key things around that granular workload protection and that lack of tape backup. With DR, obviously, there's SRM, Site Recovery Manager from VMware. It didn't quite fall into that low-cost disaster recovery bracket, because it is a bit more expensive, but it would give a more automated and granular failover capability than what DPM would, for example. But it's certainly something to bear in mind. So that's kind of all of the application stuff. When we talk about cross-platform, a lot of organizations have a big mix across all of these different things, whether it's servers, storage, networking, maybe multiple hypervisors, Windows and Linux side by side, or whatever it may be. When it comes to management, people have investments in different management tools. There's so much stuff out there. Now, if this is your organization, That's a management challenge you've got there, where you've got to integrate all of these different tools. But we've seen it. We've seen people who haven't standardized over the years, and they've acquired, maybe they've acquired companies, maybe they've just made acquisitions in pockets. I'll buy Dell servers this year and HP next year and NetApp storage the year, and whatever it may be. And management, well, we've got some HP stuff, but we're moving to CA or whatever. And it just happens, and it just snowballs. And eventually it gets to the stage where you've got so many tools and they're each performing a key part, that days are wasted managing the infrastructure and keeping the lights on. We want to help you move past that by helping you to integrate all of it into one view. And when it comes to cross-platform, I've got a little demo about how we start to enable that. No, I didn't want to go there, actually. I want to go there, that's it. And you'll have to bear with me here because the demo is right over here, right over this side on this. Oh, no, it's here as well, actually. Great. Brilliant. So, when we look at virtual machine manager, in fact, it's on my other machine. I've got demos absolutely all over the place. Oh, that's reassuring. Is that connected? No. Have we got internet? Please. Oh, there we go. We may have lost network. Oh, that's frustrating. Right, I'll come back. I'll go to this demonstration instead. So, first things first, monitoring. So I was going to show, and if I can try and get that back online, I'm not quite sure what's really gone on there. What I was going to show with heterogeneous management initially was bringing in a VMware infrastructure into Hyper-V, into System Center 2012. So enabling an organization to manage that heterogeneous environment, so both Hyper-V-based virtual machines and vSphere in the same view. And what that ultimately involves within Virtual Machine Manager is me effectively adding in the vCenter server, bringing in that connection, and today it's 4.1, so vCenter server 4.1. We're working on enabling 5, but the way the development life cycles fell and the way that we only get access to the code effectively when it's released, so then we can, it just didn't fit in our development life cycle to get it ready for 2012. So it will be 5 in the future, but today it's 4.1. But once that vCenter server is imported into Virtual Machine Manager, then I can bring in my ESX and ESXi hosts. And from that point forward, I can maintain a central managed virtual infrastructure across VMware, Hyper-V, and also Zen Server. So I can bring in all hypervisors. And you think, well, why would I do that? Are you trying to effectively replace vCenter? And that's not the case. That's not what we're trying to do. We're not trying to circumvent it. We can't. We have to go through vCenter to manage VMware's environment. We're not trying to replace it. We're trying to manage the day-to-day stuff that exists within the VMware environment. The vMotions, the storage vMotions, the creation and deletion and management of virtual machines. We're not about managing and creating distributed switches or all of the nuts and bolts stuff under the covers. You'll still use vCenter for that. But the day-to-day management of these environments is what Virtual Machine Manager would provide for VMware. For Zen Server, it's a little bit different. So we provide the ability to manage directly to Zen Server without Zen Center. You will still use Zen Center to set some stuff up, the storage, the configuration, all that kind of stuff, but you wouldn't need it after that point. And I may, while I've been waffling, woo-hey, fixed it. No idea. See, I was seamless. I got the network back online. I fixed the internet, and we're back. So I can show you exactly what I've just talked about. I've added the vCenter in. All I would have done for that, add VMware vCenter server, give it a name, port, a run as account that you would have administrative privilege to add the vCenter, and it would come in. Now, you'll notice this one's version 5. This isn't supported yet, so don't say I've authorized this or anything, but that's just the version I've got in my lab. And when I go to my hosts, I've currently got no hosts. This is a pretty vanilla infrastructure. And you think, okay, well, you've imported vCenter. Why are you not seeing all of these hosts come in? Well, you may not want to import all of them that vCenter is managing. You may only want to import a few. But I'm going to choose now, add resources, and you'll see I've got a choice, Hyper-V, Zen Server, VMware. And with Zen Server, as an example, all I need to do is point it at the Zen Server, give it the relevant information, and the prerequisite for Zen Server being imported is it needs to be, I think, version 6, and it needs to have what's known as the System Center Integration Pack that comes with Zen Server. So you just enable that on install, or you can add it after you've installed your Zen servers. Once that's done, you import, and you're good to go. But I'm going to choose ESX Hosts and Clusters, specify an account. Now, this is an account not to communicate with vCenter, but to communicate with the ESX or ESXi host directly. So it might be root, or if you're observing best practices, it probably isn't root. But we'll go with root, because that's what I've got in my environment. We'll go next. It's detected these particular hosts and this cluster. It knows it's part of a data center, but I don't have to bring it in the same hierarchy as what it is in vCenter. So I could add it to a completely different group within VMM and still manage that effectively. We'll go next, we'll go finish, and in that comes. So you see it's appearing there, bum, bum, bum. That's going really fast. So we're at 66% in the jobs view. So it's communicating with the host, it's bringing it in, it's doing all its necessary stuff, and within no time at all, there we go, it's going to refresh the cluster. And, oh, we finished. Boom, boom, boom. Refresh, refresh, completed. There we go. So we've imported a vSphere cluster into VMM. Now, you'll see there it says OK Limited. What does that mean? Well, at this stage, we've just imported these hosts, but we need to do a little bit of extra work if we want to fully manage them. And again, I stress, when I say fully manage, I don't mean do all of the nuts and bolts stuff you can do through vCenter. I just mean give us control, enough control to be able to do those day-to-day things. And to get around that, and I'm not going to do it for all three, but I'll go properties, I'll go into management here, and I'll click a certificate is required for this host. Retrieve from the host, accept, OK. And that should sort itself out. And there we go, it's gone from limited to OK. And now I can start to manage that in a more complete way. So that was a brief demo that I lost network, so I couldn't do that initially, but I've therefore explained it twice. But if we flick over to, that's bringing in the hypervisors, so we've done that kind of layer. Now we're into the monitoring side of things. And within Ops Manager, it's enabling us to monitor what's important in our environment. Exchange, SQL Server, get all of these different alerts and stuff. But where our partners have started to extend the solution is they've started to build these management packs. And if we look at the Dell management pack here and look at something like our monolithic servers diagram view, which is what's known as a distributed application, we're seeing that we can monitor these different components very effectively, and we can see that this particular physical node, it's healthy, it's got some health associated with it, it's the green tick, and we can really drill pretty deep down into some of these different areas, down into the DIMMs, and we're getting really down in the weeds of ops managers being able to identify through that management pack framework. And there's management packs from Dell and HP and IBM and NetApp. But one of the most compelling management packs that I've seen, and it should be of particular interest to the few of you that had vSphere, is around the Veeam management pack, what's known as the NWorks management pack in to some people. And that enables a very, very powerful management pack. They've really done their homework. They know VMware. They've done a great job. And their management pack pipes up all of the alerts and the metrics and the resource and the information from your vSphere infrastructure into Ops Manager. So you can view it side by side with your hardware, with your servers and your storage and your networking and your apps. You know, monitoring those applications as we saw. So that's a little bit about Ops Manager, really powerful in terms of what it's delivering under the covers. Let me go back to the slide. Oh no, the slides are on that machine, aren't they? Let me just ping back. Ooh. Oh great. The video people are going to love me. There we go, quickly, 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 quickly. Too many animations. I should have just pressed escape and gone from there, really, but quick recap for anyone watching the video. There you go. So, cross-platform. Does VMware deliver that heterogeneous management? No, unfortunately not. If you've only got VMware, not a problem. But that's today. Hopefully what you've seen at this conference is that Hyper-V is really delivering some cool stuff for your business. And if you want to embrace that in the future side by side with your vSphere infrastructure, you're going to struggle a little bit. When it comes to guest OS support, both Microsoft and VMware have some good statements around what we support. We support, from a Microsoft standpoint, all of the in-lifecycle guest operating systems virtualized on Hyper-V, vSphere, Zen Server, or any other hypervisor that's part of our server virtualization validation program. But VMware go that extra mile and say, oh, we'll support 80 operating systems. We'll support DOS 6.22 and Windows 95. And you think, this term support, you've got to be careful. Because if you're saying we support DOS 6.22 and a customer says, oh, brilliant, I've got this old box I've been dying to get rid of, I'll put it on vSphere, and something goes wrong with that operating system, you're left in a little bit of limbo because Microsoft aren't going to support that operating system. It's gone. It's out of support. So that support statement by VMware is a little bit misleading. When it comes to Linux, we support Red Hat, CentOS, Zuse Linux, a number of distributions, official support, but we've released our drivers to the community so organizations can deploy distributions that aren't on that supported list and still get great performance running on Hyper-V. And you're in the same support position as you would be running it on vSphere, because there isn't that support agreement between vSphere and the community building such and such a distribution. And when we talk about management integration, we talked briefly there about Ops Manager integrating with all of those different tools, those different Dell and HP and so on. But VMware's management tools is the only integration that starts to come is when you start to go to the higher end vCenter operations management suite capabilities, where you can plug in to other enterprise management products. So you can feed in the alerts from Ops Manager, as an example, from some of the tools like CA and so on. Now, just to recap from yesterday, we talked a bit about Hyper-V as being this foundation for powerful virtual infrastructure. And it's a great platform to run your private cloud on. But Hyper-V Server was this pretty much unknown quantity. What is that? Well, it's a separate product. It's free. And it has all of the Windows Server bits that Hyper-V has in Windows Server 2012. Absolutely. It has everything. The clustering, the high availability, the live migration, the replica, the network virtualization, everything. But it's that thinner, that core hypervisor, the drivers, and the virtualization components. And as we discussed, it's the only distribution that you'll be able to put on a USB inside this. That's me plugging a USB stick into the server there. I don't know what I was doing there, really. But it does have that smaller footprint, hence you can get it on the USB. And I think we're working on tools to help you do that as well. But there will be a requirement for the USB stick. Not for it to exist, obviously that's a requirement, but for a certain speed, and because we don't want to put it on a really old kind of free giveaway conference USB stick, you know, like you get it from the Microsoft stand. Well, it's only a gig, so it wouldn't fit on there. It does integrate into your current infrastructure because it's just a WIM file. It looks a bit different, but it still is a Windows image. So I can still deploy it from WDS or a USB or whatever tools I've got in my infrastructure. And it's got all of the features. And the features included massive scalability, big VMs, big hosts, improved performance around things like ODX, offloading stuff to the SAN, virtual fiber channel, massive clusters, great security in terms of PVLANs and protection against certain attacks. But when it comes to performance of networking, we talked about SRIOV yesterday as a capability to allow physical network cards to go through to virtual machines for that highest level of performance, but without losing agility of moving virtual machines around. We talked about flexible infrastructure, the different types of migration that exist. Live migration, and we demoed a simultaneous live migration of 8 VMs. We talked about storage migration and shared nothing live migration, where I can move a VM and its storage from a host that's not connected to any other storage or anything like that, apart from a network cable to the network, and I can move those virtual machines around flexibly. And then finally, we talked about some of the improvements in clustering. And we spent a little bit of time talking about improvements around guest clustering and how Hyper-V delivers the most flexible option for guest clusters, either with iSCSI, Fiber, or SMB storage for those workloads. So as a foundation for the private cloud, it's enabling you to scale out, to scale up, and it's well managed by System Center. But important note, To manage Hyper-V and to manage Windows Server 2012, you'll have to hang on for System Center 2012 SP1, of which the CTP 2 build, which is like an early preview pre-beta, is available to download if you do want to play with it. So the final area before we talk a little bit about cost. When it comes to cloud, we've talked today about how we enable, through systems management, to let you build these private clouds, this pooling of resources, this scale, this elasticity. And that could be on your premises, or you could link it to a service provider's premises. But that linkage is typically driven by tools like System Center. But System Center really enables you not just to communicate between these clouds and manage them as one unit through tools like App Controller and Ops Manager and so on, but it also lets you go to the public cloud. So if you wanted to start to drop virtual machines into Azure, System Center's that layer that would enable you to integrate those and monitor and manage. If you want to push your apps onto Azure, platform as a service. Again, App Controller we saw earlier, where that Expense Manager app, there was two flavors of it. We saw App Controller again, I think it was in the keynote, to be able to deliver VMs up into the cloud as well. So System Center really is that real middle ground between whatever cloud you want to build. And if you're a partner in the room, it's a great opportunity to communicate with customers around how I can use System Center to bridge their infrastructure and mine and help them have a more complete DR or a more well-managed infrastructure. And if you're a customer in the room with multiple sites, System Center as that middle is really enabling you to go in the direction you want to go. But if we compare that with VMware, we'll see it's about vCloud, so vSphere with vCloud Director on the top, and another vCloud maybe from a Verizon or a BlueLock or another vCloud services provider that exists in your geography, and it's connected by vCloud Connector. But that's it. That's it. There's no, where's the links to Cloud Foundry or the public cloud or the platform as a service? Where's the links into non-infrastructure as a service? It's all about linking infrastructures. And it's all about just linking VMware infrastructures. With the Microsoft private cloud, you can build those linkages and those private clouds that consist of heterogeneous environments. So it's giving you that flexibility as a partner and a customer to really enable a deeper level of discussion around integration. Now, all this is great, but it's inevitably not free, apart from Hyper-V Server. And when it comes to costs, I wanted to give a quick example before we finish, and this is my last kind of area. I wanted to give an example that wasn't too big, it wasn't ridiculous in numbers, so I chose 500 as a kind of round figure, because organizations get into that kind of scale are really going to benefit from the levels of automation and control that a private cloud can bring. So if we think about a 500 VM private cloud at a 15-to-1 ratio, with the chap in the audience yesterday with over 100, so it's a little bit low really, but I thought conservative, you know, some people have got a bit less than that. So 15-to-1 in terms of hosts would give us 34 hosts. And I've chosen two procs with 16 cores. Now I've excluded Windows Server licensing from this, because if you were deploying a vCloud or you were deploying a Microsoft private cloud, you're going to need Windows Server licenses on both. And it's going to be the same, effectively. So we zero out that cost. But if you did want to add Windows Server licenses, then you would add 68 processors of Data Center Edition Windows Server. And we want, and we need to deliver, from a private cloud perspective, we need comprehensive management. We can't do it with just VMM on its own or vCenter on its own. We need more cogs to the mechanism to make this work. So we need that level of comprehensive management. So that would be our kind of requirement. So with Microsoft, 68 processors of nothing is nothing. So that's free, effectively, for the Hyper-V server layer. So that's given us that virtualization, that foundation. But when we look at System Center, and the way we've changed System Center licensing is we moved away from having 100 SKUs of I need to buy Operations Manager this many times with this many agents, and I need SQL Server, and I also need Service Manager, and I also need Virtual. That's all gone. So System Center licensing now is a single license. It's one product, and it gives you the SQL Servers you need, all of the agents you need, and the actual management servers you need. So you license it per processor, just like you license Windows Server Data Center per processor. So System Center 2012, Data Center Edition, at the cost per processor, I think it's around about $1,300 a processor, sold in pairs, and that's what it would come to, based on retail pricing, of which you can find at the bottom there. So the total cost to deliver that private cloud, from a licensing perspective, is going to hit that. And it's going to give you the app performance management, the self-service, the backup, the app protection, the service management, the service catalog, orchestration, and a hell of a lot more as well. When we look at VMware, it's a little bit different. So even just that core foundation in vSphere that's given us the virtualization engine and the virtualization management and orchestration is already gone beyond what System Center is going to charge. But then we start to add on some of the other bits. vCenter, relatively small amount, if assuming you just need one. Then we start to look at adding on vCops. And vCenter Operations Management Suite is the first one that's licensed per VM in this example. So today you're at 500 VMs, and that's what it's going to cost. What's important here is I couldn't get pricing publicly, and that's important so you can refer to it. I couldn't get public pricing for vCops Enterprise Plus. And Enterprise Plus is the one you need to manage physical stuff, like non-virtualized machines, and inside the guest operating systems. So you're going to lose that capability from this example. If you want the application performance management, APM, for 500 VMs, it's going to hit you with that. And for 600, it would increase, 700, and so on. But admittedly, you might not need to monitor all 500 of your virtual machines with APM, so in which case, you'd pay less. Okay. Application Director, that blueprint technology, similar to what we saw with the multi-tiered services in VMM, that's a little bit extra as well. And finally, if you want that self-service portal over the top for 500 VMs, vCloud Director is going to come in at that price based on retail. So without SNS, which we know adds between 21 and 25% additional cost, the private cloud on VMware is going to cost a little bit more. And because it's not including the service manager costs, not including any backup costs, no in-guest management, and as you grow your business, the costs are going to increase. But do the maths for yourself. You know, all the links are there, the prices that I got. Map it to your environment and your decisions that you're making going forward. So, to wrap up. Before I wrap up, does anyone want to see an orchestrator demo? I've got 8 minutes. Yeah, right, good, excellent. I'll try and fit one in. I was desperate to show it, but I wanted to make sure that I got through the content. So, where am I? Oh, I've gone to the wrong screen. Quick, wasting time. Right, it's here. Okay, so, orchestrator. Who's familiar with this interface? Yeah, boo. Right, so Orchestrator. Orchestrator has enabled me to automate stuff. How many people have used System Center Orchestrator? Okay, a couple of people. For a lot of people, when I first started with Orchestrator and talked about automation, people were like, well, that sounds like a lot of work. It sounds complex. You know, scripting is complex, automation needs scripting, complexity, time, headaches. No. And then I started to play with Orchestrator, and I realized just how powerful it is. And here you'll see, I've imported a number of the integration packs into Orchestrator. So I was talking before, we make these available, HP, BMC, ServiceNow, there's all of the System Center ones as well, there's loads of them. But there's one here at the bottom, he says, vSphere. Now, some of these are produced by Microsoft, some of them by one of our partners, Kelverion, who have a stand in the expo if you do want to chat to them. And they're a great bunch of guys who will work with you to build integration packs that map to your environment. But what I want to do is build a simple workflow that effectively integrates with VMware. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to drag on something to start the runbook. And I'm going to effectively give this, it's going to ask for some information. So I'm going to say, give me a VM name. I'm not bothered about caps locks. That's just how I roll. Give me a VM name, and it's going to accept some string kind of parameter. And I'll finish. So this is basically what's going to kick off the runbook. Now, if I was using Ops Manager, an alert could trigger this runbook. If I was using Service Manager, a ticket could trigger this runbook. But I'm going to keep it simple. Now, I'm going to go to vSphere. there's a little bug that's not expanding this view here, so you don't normally have to just scroll across here. So I'm going to go to get VM status. Click drag. I'm going to link these two together. Boom, boom, boom. This is orchestration at its very best. And I'm going to expand. Now, I've already pre-configured a connection between Orchestrator and vSphere. Now, in my example, I'm communicating directly to an ESXi host. I'm not going via vCenter, but I could if I wanted to. So what it's asking for here is what this needs in terms of its information to move on to the next step in the workflow is it needs a VM, needs a path. And if I click here, it goes away, it queries Orchestrator at vSphere and brings back a list of the VMs. But I don't want to hard code this into being one particular VM. I want a user to be able to enter a name and it go off and choose that from vCenter. But I do need a bit of the information, so I'll choose that. I'll delete that last bit, boom, and I'll right click, subscribe, and this is where we subscribe to data that's already in the workflow. So we've already got some data from the previous stage. So I'm going to go publish data. There it is. Give me a VM name. Oh, caps lock's all over the place. Okay, and that's what it's going to pull in. So whatever I enter when we test this runbook, it's going to pipe through to here. So obviously I have to enter the name correctly. Then what I want to do, if that VM is running or if it's off, here we go, start VM. So name, let's configure the connection. There we go. It's asking for a path. Now I don't need to give it hard-coded, I can right-click and I can subscribe to the published data from the previous get VM status. So it'll have got all this information about the VM now, and I'm interested in the power state. So power state, yep, that's fine. Finish. Now I want to trigger that if... Oh, no, no, remove. Get VM status, power state, okay, equals... I'm going to go properly this time. Powered off. Okay. So if here this is powered off, it will start VM. In fact, I've got that wrong. Delete, yes. Right click, subscribe, publish data. I want to get the VM that we found in the previous state. So what's going to happen? I type in a VM name. It gets the status of that VM from vSphere. If that VM is off, so power state equals off, it runs start VM. But we need the opposite of that. Stop VM, vSphere host, the path to the VM. So what's the name? We're not going to hard code it. I just keep clicking that to show you, obviously, not by mistake. Oh, I've not linked it together. Hang on. It's in limbo. There we go. VM path, publish data. There we go. It's got it from that previous step, VM path. Okay, gracefully shut down, I don't think so, off, takes too long, finish. Right, that's the workflow built, and fingers crossed it's going to work, so I've done that at, this is Extreme Orchestrator. You'll see, it sounds like a really bad TV show. Right, so I think we're good there, we can save it. Are we good, have I done, no, okay, I'll check that. Power state, okay, equals, ooh. On. So if it's on, it will stop the VM. If it's off, it will start it, hopefully. And if not, there's one I made earlier anyway that I know works. So we'll go with that. So I'm going to run the runbook tester very quickly. And I'm going to bring up this particular view here, which some of you are familiar with. So there's our runbook tester. I'm going to dock this. There's our runbook there. So this is enabling me to test the runbook. So if it works, and I say it with a lack of confidence there, but if it works, then stuff should happen over here. So please work. Give me a VM name. Yeah, 2008 R2. Boom. Is something going to happen over here? Drum roll. Oh, something's happening. It's working. Please work. Boom, there you go. It's working, so it's powered on that virtual machine. And we want to try it the other way around. It didn't shut down properly the previous time, so that's fine. We'll run it again. 2008 R2, okay. Just to check it goes back the other way. Find entity, so it's querying, it's doing that get status. Go, go, go. Show details. Oh no, that bit's wrong. I've botched that bit. The first bit worked anyway. So there you go. That was a very, very quick workflow. I don't know, I'm not going to investigate that, but... I'm going to have a small cry to myself now that didn't work, but never mind. At least a start. It's all about starting the VMs. We don't power them down. So, what did we cover? We looked at applications and how we can deliver them in a more effective way. We looked at, just then, again, how we can manage a heterogeneous environment. That was Orchestrator pulling the strings on vSphere, giving us that control and that automation. We looked briefly at Hyper-V as a recap from yesterday, and we looked at how the Microsoft Private Cloud really enables you to build that heterogeneous cloud that you want in your environment with those key attributes of pooling, self-service, elasticity, and the usage-based if you want it as well. And with that, there's lots of related sessions. Thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate you coming along, and enjoy the rest of the day and safe journey home.